From high atop the hidden bunker in the Rocky Mountains, it's time for Downrange Radio and your host, Michael Bain.
The pipes, the glorious pipes. Merry Christmas from Downrange Radio. That was Michael Hamilton on the pipes, the glorious pipes, the bagpipe. A little solo version of the little drummer boy on bagpipe. They're probably not playing that on regular radio, so I knew you would want to hear it as we head into like Christmas Eve tomorrow. Anyway, as always, welcome to Downrange Radio. I am your host, Michael Bain. And golly, it's the end of the year. It's the end of the year. Winter started on Monday, of course, the winter solstice, Yule. And Christmas is on Friday, and I don't know. I don't know about you, but Christmas got away from me this year. I don't know what happened. I don't know. Maybe they changed the date and nobody sent me the memo. But I don't have very many people to buy presents for. And in a moment of strange lucidity, I thought, oh my God, why don't I get my sweetie's Christmas present early? Why don't I get it months before? And just as I was thinking that, as if she could read my mind, and guys, you know as well as I do that women can, in fact, read our minds. But she walks into the room and she says, I would like a longbow for Christmas. And I said, okay. Okay, what do you say when your spousal unit tells you that she wants a longbow for Christmas? You start wondering if you can get, like, ceramic plate for your body armor, right? Because those arrows will whip right through regular Kevlar. But I said, certainly, and a target and everything she wanted. And as I said on the Michael Bain blog this morning, I did say, wow, that's so cool, and I'll get you one of those little green short skirt outfits, a little beret, kind of all Robin Hood Sherwood Forest. And she said, no, actually you won't. So, but I placed this order months in advance, and I know a company called Siegework Creations, a wonderful little company specializing in custom longbows and traditional archery things. But it's just not going to be ready in time, and I'm kind of heartbroken. I wanted that long package under the tree for my sweetie to rip open, string, and put an arrow through. Gosh, what's left around here? It's the dead of winter. Maybe one of the penguins wandering around in the front yard from the bitter cold we've been having. Anyway, I'm kind of heartbroken about that, so I feel like maybe I ought to steal away down to the People's Republic of Boulder and see if I can at least ferret out a few last-minute gifts. And I'm still looking for that little Sherwood Forest outfit, but I don't know. I'd probably be the one to end up wearing it. she held the arrow on me. I put on the little beret. I don't know. Oh, gosh, Christmas week. Anyway, it's things are rolling along. Things are rolling along. You know, it's been, and oddly enough for us, it's been a very good year in gun rights. And you know, that's super, right? Most recently, a bill has gone to our president to sign, and that will allow Amtrak riders, guys out there on the railroad, to of course have their guns with or in a lockbox, same way as on a plane. You know, you check your luggage, you got a gun in a lockbox, you can carry a handgun on the plane. Interestingly enough, there was a typographical error in the bill that went to the president, which stated that instead of having the gun in a lockbox, the gun and the passenger both had to be in a locked box, which is kind of cool. I mean, it sort of does away with the whole grim idea of riding on a train, you know, ugly, smoky, crowded train. We just lock you in a box and ship you. Anyway, that's sort of where we are. That's sort of where we are. It's been a good year for gun rights, even though it's been a bad year for all of our other rights. So, you know, we hope we can get that straightened out next year. I think it's inappropriate to really rant on the few days before Christmas. It's such a special time of the year, world around. And, you know, for me, and this is not a secret, right? On this time of year and Christmas time of year, I can't help but just almost obsess about our troops, our men and women in far-flung places, in battlefields like Afghanistan and Iraq and in other places all around the world. So that we can sleep safely in our beds, that they stand that watch for us, and they put their lives on the line for us, and sometimes they die for us. And that's just and it's a gift beyond compare. It's a gift that one we can never repay as a country. And when we talk about Christmas, so much of Christmas is home and family. I know that you can't make me go anywhere on Christmas Day, right? It's when I was a kid, I used to go to my grandparents' house, but now I want to be with my family. And I want to be in my home on Christmas. That you know, of all days of the year, it can pass quietly, and you know, I can enjoy the love and the care that comes with a family. And so, at this time of year, my heart just goes out to those people overseas who are there for us, and you know, more than anything else, I certainly wish them peace for this week. I wish that maybe we could all just call a time out. I know it's not going to happen. You know, it's sad that it's not, that we just can't say, you know, can we just have a week, guys? You know, you can work on the jihad next week, but can we just have a week? But of course we can't. And so they are standing guard for us, and our thoughts, our prayers, our hopes, our dreams are all with those people overseas. So if there is a rant to be had on the week before Christmas, that is indeed the rant that we remember in our hearts and our prayers and our minds when we sit down to our Christmas dinner, when we sit down to open those packages. Let's stop for a moment and think about those who serve us, those who help us, those who keep us alive, keep the American dream alive, the men and women in the service, our soldiers, our Marines. Gosh, what can you say? Except thank you. Thank you. So number one, that's what we're going to talk about this Christmas. We're going to talk about the troops. And one thing that's very powerful to me is we have, I know I have a lot of listeners in Afghanistan. I have a lot of listeners in Iraq. I hear from you guys all the time, and darn it, thank you. You know, from Downrange Television, from Downrange Radio, from all the things that we do for the Outdoor Channel, believe me, you are all in all our hearts and prayers, from the crew of Downrange Radio, Downrange Television, Shooting Gallery, Cowboys, Best Defense. We're thinking about you, and thank you so very much.
Like the shooting sports? Like to see the newest firearms before anyone else? Then there's only one place to be on Wednesday nights. Outdoor Channel, America's leader in outdoor TV.
You know, I've managed to cause a lot of dissonance in this last week on various and sundry blogs and forums and things, because I've been sort of taunting people. I got some great new guns in the house. And I am under an embargo, signed embargo, not to mention the guns, until January 4. But I just can't resist kind of poking around like, among other things, I've got several guns from Ruger Firearms, and I got to give those guys credit. They basically are able to figure out what it is we want. And partly, you know, they look at what custom gunsmiths spend a lot of time doing, or they get all this information coming in, and then they put that product out. And they're really good at I think of what I think of as a market-focused target. You know, they're able to hit it pretty good, dead on. The three guns that I have, and I know there's a fourth Ruger coming that I don't have. It's still in production prototype right now. There's only a couple of them around, and my understanding is that the guys from Ruger are, as we speak, driving down to the NRA to show the guys at the NRA all four new products, carrying one of the two production prototypes of product number four. But gosh, and what I've been taunting people on is I got this great single action revolver from Ruger, and I was really surprised. It comes kind of out of left field. That, you know, when I opened the box, I'm like, wow, okay. And then I realized that you know, on boards like Lee Martin's single action board, which is a wonderful board, John Taffin frequents it regularly, Mr. Single Action, a friend of mine, great guy, and I realized that, wow, these guys are going to light up like Christmas trees when they see this puppy. I took it out, I shot a cowboy match on Saturday, and I was really glad that I mean, even, you know, the tundra weather we've been having since the end of summer pretty much actually broke, and we were able to go to my sweetie and I were able to go to a cowboy match up at Pawnee Station, outside of Fort Collins, a wonderful group to shoot with. It's kind of one of our regular groups that we shoot with. And I brought along that Ruger and let some people shoot it, and golly, if I'd have had a bunch of them, I could have sold them like popcorn on the spot. Anyway, cool gun. And the other guns that I have from Ruger are dead on target. One of them I'm really excited about, semi-auto, and but you can't tell you a thing about, right? And but now you're taunted, right? You're going like, what's he got anyway? What's he got? But I notified Ruger on the single action that I would be purchasing it, and on the semi-auto, I'd be purchasing that too. So don't expect them back. You'll get a check from me as soon as you let me know what the price is. And that should tell you something, because we've got a lot of guns coming through the house, and we just box them up, ship them back. You get to shoot them, box them up, ship them back. But those two, I said, whoopee, buying those. Those must join the Michael Bain collection. So, I'm looking forward to SHOT. I always look forward to SHOT anyway, because, you know, I love to get out there and see stuff. You know, I like to get out there and kind of get a sense of what's going on in the industry. You know, Smith & Wesson has a new product coming, lots of new stuff coming out there. And I'm just curious. I'm always just curious about what new guns are going to be in our hands. So that's a big driver. I'm hopefully today and tomorrow we got a little break in the snow, a little break in the cold. I want to get back out to the range and put some more rounds downrange on the new guns, and maybe a couple of the old guns. As most of you know, if you've been reading the blog, you know that I'm committed to 50 caliber. We're looking for that. And one of the things I wanted to mention here as we go into the end of the year is the 50 caliber Shooters Association, of which I am a proud member, is kind of in financial straits. It's just, they run the competitions and they fight the wars, and they're definitely kind of in bad straits. And what would help them a lot if there were new members, if we could get some more members for the 50 caliber Shooters Association, it would help us in the fights that we fight. And secondly, come on, admit it. You guys love the idea of 50 BMG. You love the idea of the big boomers, and you're just darned excited. You're darned excited about shooting it. But so why not get a head start on it? And of course, as always, anything we talk about here on Downrange Radio, we also give you the links on Downrange Television, www.downrange.tv, powered by Outdoor Channel, by Outdoor Channel, for whom we all labor. So go by there and, you know, hit the link on 50 Caliber Shooters Association, and then join. You know, you get a really cool magazine, like Very Big Bore magazine or whatever, it's gigantic Big Bore magazine, quarterly mag that I really look forward to because it's all things 50. Tremendous amount of information there. If you're even just interested in shooting 50, anything like that, there's a tremendous amount of information on the 50 Caliber Shooters Association website. And that's why I think you should join. It's sort of, you know, we all belong to the NRA because it's important, and we need to. I believe everybody should be a member of the 50 Caliber Shooters Association, because, you know, realistically, that's the sharp point of the spear. You know, that's where the first attacks are going to come. That's where we're going to have to start fighting the wars that we're going to be fighting next year. So, anyway, check out the 50 Caliber Shooters Association. Lust after the guns. And, you know, maybe you'll be out there with me. You know, like I said, I want to shoot my first long-range match with 50 caliber shooters in summer of 2010. So, hey, maybe you'll be out there with me. You know, I got a reminder today that I'm definitely not omniscient. Now, if you're a regular listener to the podcast here at Downrange Radio, you know that I've said, wow, you know, it's kind of the economic situation got worse. Foreclosures increase, that what we could expect to see is soaring crime. And I kind of base that on guys I know in law enforcement and on some of the material that had gone out from the feds. And here's something really interesting, is none of that happened. The FBI's crime stats came out earlier in the week, and everyone is totally shocked. I mean, the release said something to the effect that unemployment's high, economy's down, yet with all the signs of the recession, something is missing, more crime. Murders fell 10% in the first half of 2009. Violent crime, etc. Robberies even dropped 8%. Violent crime is way down. And everybody's very happy about that. No one has a clue as to why it might be. It certainly surprised me, because certainly in every other economic downturn, we've seen substantial increases in violent crime, and we're not seeing it in this one. It's kind of interesting. Chance, over at Say Uncle Blog, a friend of mine there, he had an interesting speculation. I'm saying interesting too much, aren't I? But he has a speculation on why that might be. And he thinks, and I won't even argue this with him, this may well be the truth, that the incredible number of guns that have been purchased since our president Obama, since his election, has basically sort of slanted the queue there. It's kind of changed the line. It pushed the old hockey stick downward, or whatever you want to say. Remember, millions of new gun owners have come into the culture since the elections in November. This has been, we don't see it now. The bubble has since popped, but this has been the biggest year for gun sales in the history of man on the planet. And over at Say Uncle Chance speculates that, hey, maybe that's what's driven the crime down. You know, do you really want to go out and try some home invasions or some burglaries at home when you know everybody on the block has an AR-15? It's an interesting point. But I did want to point out that I'm definitely not omniscient. I certainly thought crime would increase, as did the FBI, as did most major law enforcement. There were a lot of bulletins that have gone out in the last year of like, oh, be ready for this. But that's good. That's good. Large cities are down. Regular communities, suburban communities are down. So the fact that crime is down is a good thing. It doesn't mean you get to leave the gun at home. Crime, as you know, is a little bit like summer lightning. It's going to pop up at all sorts of odd places. So I thought that was interesting, though. You know, I'm always interested when the crime stats come out for the year, or at least for the first half of the year. It takes them a little while to get the overall yearly crime stats out. But I don't see why there's that's not the case with that many new guns coming in. And another thing, and we'll probably talk about this more next week as we look toward New Year's, but several things have happened this year that I think could have a telling effect. You know, we've seen the rise of open carry, where people have guns on their hips. And darn, how about that? I think that open carry has a chilling effect on criminals, because that way they can't have any illusion. They're not thinking, oh, well, you know, maybe they don't have a gun. You know, maybe they don't have a gun. Well, apparently they do. It's on their hip. We've seen that the acceptance of concealed carry overall. I think with the Parks bill being signed, and of course on February of next year, February of 2010, I think February 22nd, we can start carrying in national parks, as we should have been able to all along, certainly depending on the state regulations. But lots of focus on guns, and almost all of it positive. Of course, you know, we've had some mass shootings, as we do every year, too many rats in the box. But overall, the anti-gun movement is in collapse. You know, they don't have any money. Nobody's contributing to them. Nobody even thinks for a moment that they have the brains of hamsters. They don't have a national movement. They never had a national movement, and now it's clear that the emperor has no clothes. There is no national movement. So you're like, why, Michael, are you talking about all this stuff now? Because the fight never ends. And I think you guys know that. The fight never ends. Interesting points, just data points, just file these away. Of course, there was an attempted mass shooting in Times Square in New York recently, last week, I believe. And the only reason it didn't work was the pistol that the aggressor had jammed. He wanted to shoot it sideways. He wanted to shoot it gangsta style. And turned it sideways, pulled the trigger a couple of times, round drops back in the ejection port, guns jammed. Newspapers say he had a machine pistol. Really? He had a machine pistol? No, he didn't. He had a semi-automatic pistol. Yes, it looked like a MAC-10, which is a machine pistol. But you can get a Taurus that looks like a NASCAR. And you can get a Taurus Ford, old Ford Taurus, that's decked out like a NASCAR car. Doesn't mean it is what it looks like. key point that we've tried to make to the media year in, year out, year in, year out, and they're not listening. Of course, the mainstream media isn't listening to anybody, is it? But I heard that on the news last night. He had a machine pistol. No, he didn't. He had a semi-automatic pistol. And hell, if he'd have had a Glock, he could have turned it sideways. It would have worked. Anyway. Well, actually, nothing works if a round drops back into the ejection port. That just comes under the heading of there you are. I mean, you just weren't cut out to be a mass murderer. But again, you know, we see that the media is a consistent theme with the anti-gun movement and their collaborators in the mainstream media, and that is to confuse legal and commonplace with exotic and scary. That has been a plan, certainly for the Violence Policy Center, for the Brady Center since their inception, is confuse people thinking, oh my God, he went out and bought a machine pistol. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. Bought a semi-automatic pistol. Second thing, New York Times, editorial New York Times yesterday, Sunday Times, quoting that study that we debunked last week. Remember that study done by Bloomberg and his shills and the Mayors Against Illegal Guns? New York Times quotes it. Well, NRA members are in favor of gun control. That's funny. Think about that. What other survey that's been completely debunked, conducted by guys who've been censured by their own industry, with questions that were designed to elicit a specific response, and yet the New York Times, after the fact, is going, well, them NRA members, they just want to ban guns and register guns, and oh, man. Oh, gosh. We have enemies in the mainstream media. It certainly goes without saying there. On morning television last week, yet another, I believe it's National Geographic, on the drug war in Mexico. Which, by the way, is not the drug war in the United States. Drug war in Mexico, which is another country, by the way. I don't know if anybody in the United States knows that, but it's another country. And the perky little Lucy Liu, whichever one of them it was that did it, she goes, and she was breathless. She goes, I went into a gun store in Texas, and I could have bought a semi-automatic rifle. I could have bought a semi. I thought she's going to start weeping. Well, of course you could have bought a semi-automatic rifle. You know what? You know, if you're a resident of Texas and you meet all the criteria for buying a gun, of course you can buy a semi-automatic rifle in Texas. You've been able to buy a semi-automatic rifle in Texas since, I don't know what, 1911? Who knows? Long time. But it's a sign that always the anti-gunners are percolating right under the surface. And you never know. One never knows. So far, the present administration has been unwilling to attack us, although they've attacked everything else. But they've been unwilling to come head on at us. But, you know, that could well change next year. We have to be vigilant. So hang on one second. Let me do a little plug here for Crimson Trace. My pals at Crimson Trace, you know, with their green laser. You've seen that coming out there. And, rock solid product. Interestingly enough, in January, we're going to have some branded entertainment, some training and some stuff like that from Crimson Trace on OutdoorChannel.com and Downrange as well. So hang on a second. A few words from Crimson Trace. We'll be right back.
I've been on the local police force for 10 years now. I've stayed away from different gadgets and gimmicks that were supposed to improve my shooting. A few months ago, when I was at the range, another officer was using Crimson Trace laser grips. I have to say, I was pretty skeptical at first. Well, he let me shoot his gun, and I couldn't believe how fast and accurately I could hit the target, even in unconventional positions. At that point, I became a true believer and bought a set for myself. They were simple to install and easy to use. Crimson Trace laser grips are not a cure-all, but when my life depends on it, that red dot clearly identifies my point of aim, especially in low-light conditions when most shootings occur. You could say it helps bad guys make informed decisions.
Get to your favorite gun shop and try a set today. Or contact Crimson Trace for a free catalog at the location of a dealer near you. Call 800-442-2406 or visit their website at crimsontrace.com.
To Downrange Radio, brought to you by our great sponsors at Downrange Television, Ruger Firearms, who have some really cool new stuff that I can't tell you about. Para USA, who have some really cool stuff I can't tell you about. Liberty Safes, great big steel boxes, I can tell you about them. And, of course, my friends at Tactical Solutions, 22 conversion unit solutions, and to keep you shooting even when ammo's tight. I got a bunch of emails asking me recently is what I wanted for Christmas. And you know, gun-wise, I want a bunch of stuff, but the problem is it's all expensive stuff, and so I got to wait till next year to see, after they finish taxing me into the Twilight Zone, if I can actually afford to get any of them. I think first and foremost on the list is I'd like a Night Force scope for my Barrett Model 99. I've been using a Burris scope on it, and I just want to change to a little bit better, longer distance scope. A Leupold Mark IV, a Night Force. A Night Force is my number one choice, because I polled all my friends who shoot 50s and said, what's the one you liked? What's the one you ended up with? And a large percentage of them went through a lot of different scopes and ended up with Night Force. So that's something I'd really like, and I know they're not giving them away. Maybe Skorsky. Oh, gosh. You know, I'll never be able to pronounce that. But you know, they made scopes for Barrett for a while. And as I mentioned on the blog again, that I ran into some guys from the company there who said they were going to check around. They thought there were some of the Barrett long-range Swarovski scopes available. And if they were, you know, they'd call me up, and maybe I could figure something out. That's I'd love to have one of the Dillon Progressive 50 caliber presses that aren't available yet, but hopefully 60 to 90 days, my guys at Dillon tell me that for 50 caliber, they're working the bugs out. The production line is up, so those hopefully guys will be coming pretty soon. They're also working on a set of carbide dies for 50 caliber. That'd be interesting. I mean, you'd still have to lube the heck out of them, but boy, that's, as they said, they'll be pricey. Actually, they had that ... afterwards. You know, they said, you know, Michael, those 50 caliber carbide dies are going to be pricey. But that's something, boy, I'd love to see that as a stocking stuffer. One thing I'd love to have a full-blown B-Western holster setup from Bob Murnickel. He does the coolest, like, B-Western. And within cowboy action shooting, there's several classes that are based on how you dress. And one of those is B-Western, which means you get to dress like really trashy, your trashy Western stars in the most crummy movies and TV shows. And from my standpoint, you know, I've got a whole collection of Day of the Dead Mexican cowboy shirts, mostly from Rockmount Western Wear. We've talked about them down in Lodo in Denver. They've been making snap button cowboy, and they invented the snap button cowboy shirt. I've got a bunch of their shirts that are focused on kind of Day of the Dead. Lots of skeletons, barbed wires, and guns. Hard to argue with that. And they would do well in like a B-Western class, but you need to wear a Buscadero-type holster. And what I'm talking about there is in a Buscadero-type holster, there's a special hanger on the belt that the holster hangs on. And those holsters probably did exist in Mexico in the days of the Old West. Certainly weren't very common. They became common in B-Westerns. They sort of turned up in movies and then on television. So you have to wear those, and Bob Murnickel makes a superb B-Western holster. It's, like, so cool. It's really trashy beyond words, which, you know, if you're going to wear shirts with skulls, skeletons, barbed wire, and guns, you might as well have a holster that looks really scary. So those are the kind of things that are kind of on my Christmas list that I'm not getting, because like everybody else, money's tight these days. I did give myself one Christmas present. I actually ordered it about 4 or 5 months ago. And that's a Walnut Hill Swaging Press from Richard Corbin. Essentially, imagine a nuclear reloading press, beefed up. And primarily, it's I got it because I also want to be able to reload 50 a little, you know, if I have that press and the smaller Hornady press, 50 caliber dedicated press that I have set up now, I can use the really heavy-duty press to size and then the Hornady press to seat the bullets, of course, on the 50. But more than that, I've always been fascinated with swaging. I've always been fascinated with the idea of taking, like, raw lead wire and squeezing it into bullets. And I think that's because when I was a kid, My father had one of those real old, maybe a Herder swaging press. Remember the Herder's catalogs that predated Midway USA, predated, I believe predated Brownells, but the Herder's catalogs had all these different Herder's branded stuff, and they made a small swaging press, and I may be confused as to who made it, but my father would make half jacket 357 bullets for his flat top Blackhawk, and I would help him, and it was just a little press. It's you know, it almost looked like, say, you know, one of the small RCBS presses. And so you had to kind of like stand on that handle to compress the raw lead wire into the bullet, into the cup, the half jacket, copper jacket, and squeeze the bullet in. What you got was sort of a semi-wide cutter bullet. And that was the primary bullet that he shot out of that flat top. So I would help him from the time I was a little kid, as being there pulling that big lever and swaging bullets. And so I always meant to kind of get back to it, see what it would be like to do some swaging. And the 50 BMG kind of gave me that excuse to get a bigger press. When you're sizing 50 caliber brass, which is really like steel, it takes a lot of leverage on a small press like the Hornady, the RCBS. I have the Hornady press. And I thought, well, it'd be great if I had a bigger press to do the sizing on and maybe get a swaging press and look at swaging some bullets. Because a lot of the shooting I'm doing is cowboy action shooting, you know. And put a lot of rounds down range. And, again, low velocity. So at low velocities, leading, painting the inside of a barrel with lead, does not become an issue. Something we agonized over back in the early days at IPSC, because basically we couldn't lay our hands on any really hard cast stuff initially. When we started shooting as many rounds as we were shooting, and remember, if you go back to like 79, 80, when IPSC was really starting to take off, you know, we were talking about, oh, we're shooting like 5,000 rounds a month. People would be going like, 5,000 rounds a month? Holy cow, bubba, whoa, dog. It was amazing. And, you know, at that point, I think we've mentioned this before, is I remember seeing a paper from the Army when they were looking at adopting the Beretta, and they said the working life of the gun would be 5,000 to 7,000 rounds. And I'm thinking like, wow, you know, you have a gun for a month and get another one. But part of that as well is it was hard to source bulk components. You know, if you remember back then, it's typically the way you got bullets is if you weren't casting them yourself, it is that you bought them 100 at a time, and it's a fairly big deal. You know, when I remember going into a gun store and they had the Hornady swaged bullets in 45, and I said, you know, 100 to a box. I said I'd like to buy 1,000, and they're kind of looking at me like, well, we got 300. Then we'll have to order the rest of them, and what on earth are you going to do with 1,000 of these bullets? So I'm going to run through them pretty quickly, as a matter of fact. And we started buying bullets from friends who set up casting operations, and a lot of times it was kind of like a car wheel weight casting. You know, that's where the lead was coming from, or who knows where the lead was coming from. Some of those bullets were soft, and so you'd spend a day on the range and then a day in your basement with a Lewis lead remover, sort of a window screen that attached to a cleaning rod, and you would scrub the lead out of the bore. It's one of the most amazingly boring things you'll ever do. It'll make you want to take up golf, because that way you can meet cocktail waitresses. None of that. It's right before Christmas, and none of that. So I really was interested in swaging just because of my old connection to swaging. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to start out with 44 specials because, you know, we're just lobbing those guys around. And I thought that would be kind of fun, make up some 44 special bullets and see what I can do with that. So, and if that works, I might look at 357 and 32s and such. Also, for some of the specialty things that bullet cost a lot for, my 455 Webley, Smith & Wesson hand ejector and 455 Webley. Not that you do a lot of shooting of that, but you don't really crank it up either. Also, I'm thinking a lot about 44 Russian as a cartridge. You know, I've got some Russian. I've shot a lot of Russians, you know. But in talking to Hamilton Bowen, who is an enabler and a bad man, Hamilton Bowen is an enabler. He enables you to do things that you don't mean to do, which is basically spend all your money on custom guns. But he was talking about how accurate the 44 Russian is out of a gun that's chambered in 44 Russian. You know, you can certainly shoot them in 44 Special or 44 Magnum guns, but you got a bunch of jump there. But it was kind of a gallery car. You know, it did some gallery work in its day, and it's kind of interesting to me. I have 1,000 rounds of 44 Russian lying around downstairs in the gun room. So, you know, what I always say is that sometimes you just got to go out and get a gun so you can shoot the stuff in your basement. Although I haven't yet gone out and bought that Astra semi-automatic so I can shoot up that 1,000 rounds of 9mm Largo that for some reason crawled into my room. I didn't buy it. Somebody must have given it to me. It must have arrived, I don't know, on some sort of like a strange ship. But, you know, you never know when you're going to need 1,000 rounds of 9mm Largo. So, hey, maybe I'll get a Star. Maybe I'll get an Astra. Maybe I'll get a Spanish destroyer carbine, which I haven't seen for sale in ages. I believe they shot 9mm Largo. So, anyway. Yeah, I wanted to just touch on a couple of more self-defense issues, just a couple of things in passing, and before we get out of here and let you get down to Christmasing, I'm also going to sneak out this afternoon and go see Avatar, because, I mean, I'm a science fiction geek guy, so, you know, even if it's stupid, bad military, big corporation, raping, pillaging natives, I just kind of like to see strange creatures jumping around there. But just a couple of self-defense points before we move on here. The first is that as you evaluate your self-defense lessons for thinking about the next year, do not be seduced by hot. And what brought that to mind was an email question I got this week that said, you know, what's my favorite 357 load in the really ultralight small frame revolvers? And I think you already know my answer to that. My answer is none of the above. It's easy to get seduced by hot. You know, you read the gun magazines, you're going like, wowie zowie. You know, do you realize you can get a cartridge that'll break the speed of sound three times over and do a, you know? Don't be seduced by hot, because you're going to have to make an assumption that there's no such things as one-shot stops. And that what you're going to have to do is consider the follow-up shots. And if you can't deliver the follow-up shots, you could find yourself in a world of hurt. So as you're thinking about, you know, kind of, I think a good thing to do at the end of the year is kind of audit your carry. You know, are you going to go to a new gun? Am I thinking about a new gun? Do I like the gun I got? And let me put some rounds through it. Let me put some of my carry rounds through it on the range. Let's work it in and out of the holster a little bit. Let's make sure I remember how to draw from this particular holster. Sort of a self-defense audit is really critical, which was actually the second point I was going to bring up, is go through your self-defense planning. Go through your carry gun. Go through your routine carry tools. Do you always carry a folding knife? I do, of course. Always a folding knife in my left-hand pocket because, you know, I can use that knife as a tool for gun retention. You know, to evaluate your tools at the end of the year. Sit there and say, let's think a little bit about those tools that I use and carry on a regular basis. So I'm not going to be seduced by hot. I'm going to use ammunition that I know I can deliver a follow-up shot on. I may be able to deliver two follow-up shots if I need them. That is more important than firing El Blasto. Like I said, you want hot, I'll loan you my Ruger Alaskan. You can load up those 454 Casull hunting loads. And if the first shot don't kill them, you're in a world of hurt. You're going to have to pull that gun down from space where it has recoiled to. So you're not going to be seduced by hot. You're going to do an audit, a self-defense audit. You're going to think about everything that you carry for self-defense. You're going to think about your own self-defense planning. That is, do I have to carry something separate in the car? Do I drive a lot? Maybe I should be carrying something in the car extra. Everything about self-defense, it never hurts to sit down at the end of the year and bullet point that stuff out. And tell yourself, does it work? And here's, you know, you're talking about your carry gun, your ammunition. You go, does it work? Well, that doesn't mean did I shoot somebody this year who was trying to inflict harm upon me and mine. It means have I shot the gun? If you're not shooting the gun because it's so icky to shoot, you've got a problem with it, and you need to address that problem. So do that audit. Just think about the way you carry on a daily basis, what you carry on a daily basis. Ask yourself why you carry it on a daily basis. Maybe your situation has changed. Maybe you're in a different job. Maybe you're taking different routes to work. Maybe you're carpooling instead of driving, taking public transportation instead of driving. All those things can have an effect on the self-defense tools that you use on a daily basis. So as we're coming to the end of the year, think about sitting down and auditing those tools. So anyway, tomorrow is Christmas Eve. I wish you and yours the very best of Christmas Eve. And as we said in the first part of this podcast, and as I kind of want to go out with, remember those who stand between us and scary things. Remember our soldiers. Remember the men and women in our armed forces, our soldiers, our Marines, our special forces guys, those guys that go into harm's way on a daily basis. And they do that so we can have Christmas at home. So on Friday, we can have a wonderful Christmas dinner and not sit there waiting for to hear sirens sounding. And so remember those guys and thank them if you get a chance. Anything you can do to thank them, you can help them. You can certainly reach out to the Wounded Veterans organizations. And it's something that we're doing at Outdoor Channel and we're doing for Shooting Gallery and Cowboys. And all our programming is reach out to the Wounded Veterans organizations. And anything you can do to help them, it's the right thing to do. And this is the time of the year for giving. And these are the people to whom we should give. So, as always, I'm Michael Bain. This is Downrange Radio, and I thought we'd go out a little bit with one of my favorites, kind of a low-key song, Homies, I guess, Booker T and the MGs doing Silent Night, and I'm from Memphis, as you know, and so they're kind of a home group, and it's a nice version. So remember, on the coming days, above all days of the year, peace. Remember our soldiers, remember those who stand between us and chaos. And as always, no matter what, you know, you never know when the Elf Liberation Front is going to strike. So, hey, till next week, stay safe out there.